Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, September 14th. I'm Ray Graff. We talk photography every so often on this program, and today we will do just that. We'll talk about the art of photography and taking photographs with veteran photographer Michael Zide, whose work has appeared in the New York Times, the Boston Globe, and in galleries all over the country. He is here to answer your questions and give you some advice for all the photo opportunities in your life. He is a great technician, but in many ways also a great philosopher about photography, and we'll talk about that coming up. Our number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Photography Today. You can also email the program, voxpop@wamc.org. We will open the phones after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. You know, whether you use film or you use the CCD way of photography, there are a few tricks, and our guest today has mastered them. Michael Zide has had his work appeared everywhere from the New York Times and Boston Globe to the Santa Barbara Museum of Art and the State House in Boston. He has been an instructor at the Hallmark Institute of Photography and has taught or talked about photography all over the region. Always great to have Michael Zide on this program. Welcome back to the show, sir.
Thank you, Ray. It's great to be here.
Our number is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You could email if you wish. WAMC is our website, and you could email voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number on this call-in show is 800-348-2551. Michael Zide, it's been a while. What have you been up to?
Thanks, Ray. It's been a while indeed. I've been making pictures, a lot of pictures, which I'm happy to say many of which I actually enjoy and like and are in the permanent collection.
Your permanent collection?
In my permanent collection.
So what happens to the ones you don't like?
They languish on the computer and occasionally, and this is what I find interesting, months may go by and I'll realize that that was the one I shouldn't have overlooked because, you know, you really, in fact, a lot of photographers do that. They put their work away in a drawer for a few months to get away emotionally from the moment they took it and really see it more objectively.
But isn't the emotion part of the key to the whole thing?
Taking the picture has an emotional component for sure.
But why would you want to separate that then?
Well, you see reality. Well, let me go back to a saying, if I can recall it. It's not about what you take the picture of. It's what the photograph of that setting will look like. So there really is a difference between the photograph and the reality that you're photographing. And a lot of times emotions get between you and recognizing what will work itself out as a really good photograph.
The reality, that's a rather... it's a subjective thing.
It's all subjective, but let me give you a for instance. Yesterday, I was down at the Quabbin Reservoir, which is in Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. The fog was rolling in and rolling out, and of a particular scene, I must have exposed, and this is with a digital camera, at least 40 or 50 frames, changing things subtly, because I've learned over time that at that moment, I can never be sure that what I think is the best photograph will end up being one that I see as the most effective and the most promising of the pictures that connects with both myself and a potential viewer.
You say effective. Effective in what way?
Effective in the sense that the pictures that I try to make, I hope, are imbued with a degree of mystery and surprise. I'm trying to find an uncommon way of seeing the sights that people see in their common going around, especially in the Pioneer Valley. The valley is an incredibly beautiful place. What I'm trying to do with my photographs of the valley is find moments in time that appeal to me, both because the light, the weather, all the elements come together, but that I'm seeing it in a fresh way.
And you are very much about a sense of place.
I am. I've lived in two places since growing up in Los Angeles. I moved to Martha's Vineyard and lived there for 13 years and worked at doing a collection of photographs that I hope to turn into a book. And now the Pioneer Valley, we've actually been there, my wife, my son, and I, for over 35 years.
Yeah.
You'd think I would tire of photographing within a circumscribed space, but every day is a new day. Every time I go out and observe the landscape, I see it in a different way because of both the weather, the light, and other elements, and I've changed myself, and that's what's so interesting.
You've changed. Does that mean what you consider to be a good subject of a photograph has changed?
I think that does change, absolutely. If I look at the work I did 50 years ago, and I hate to look back that far sometimes, but I think my eye has shaped a more refined vision of the world around me photographically. I still get the same enjoyment I got back then looking at the world of nature and landscape. I still enjoy. That hasn't changed, but I think my eye has sharpened.
You're better at your craft.
I'm better at my craft.
Our guest today is Michael Zide. We talk photography. The number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551 is the number, or you can email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. We got this email in here, Michael, and this one's from Jack. What are the functions that I need to consider when looking for a small pocket general camera? I don't even have a smartphone. For general use, less than $200. I do want one that can handle low, even moonlight photography.
That's challenging, to have a sensor that's good enough to expose for long durations, especially if you're going to do nighttime photography. Things that will affect the final outcome are the quality and, unfortunately, the expense of that piece of equipment, because the more expensive it is, the more they've refined your sensor. And the more refined the sensor is, the less noise you're going to get when you shoot at high ISOs.
And you are now fully digital. You don't use film much anymore?
I don't. And I have to say I'm also a vegetarian, and films have a component. The component of gelatin that I really try to stay away from.
Okay, fair enough. Our guest today is Michael Zide. The number is 800-348-2551. We go over to Doug in Springfield. Doug, you're on.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi. My question is basically, I'm new using a DSLR, and I'm trying to figure out what the best type of lens it is to start with. I have a Nikon that came with an 18-55 lens. But I do a lot more of the outside kind of panoramic, not panoramic, but landscape photography. And I'm trying to find out what type of lens would be best for me to try to start with, what quality of lens and what type of lens, speed-wise and all.
Well, you know, I have to say that the quality of the lens will affect the quality of the final image. So it depends what you're demanding from your photographs. If you're like myself, I'm trying to take my photographs and use them in book or magazine form, as well as work with interior designers and architects to solve their interior space needs. So my photographs may have to be blown up to quite a substantial size, or even if not blown up beyond, let's say, 17 by 22, which is a standard paper size these days for digital printing. You don't want to notice a bunch of what are called artifacts, which is when the digital sensor can't hold up to the rigors of what you're asking it to do. And one of those rigors might be long exposure durations.
Mm.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Sorry.
Go ahead, Doug.
It came with a very basic 18-55 millimeter lens. It's a Nikon 5300.
Let me tell you, I think I can give you at least from my perspective how I see this. Yesterday when I was photographing, and I'll tell you what that lens is in a moment, because it has become my favorite lens for landscape photography in terms of its zoom ability. But there was a fellow who was photographing birds with, I think it was a 250-500 millimeter Nikkor lens. I don't need 500 millimeters to do what I do. In fact, for the most part, the lens I use is 28 millimeters to 300 millimeters. I've only had it about 6 months, and I find that I almost almost don't need to go out in the field with any other lens but that. So for my purposes as a landscape photographer, and you may want to look at my work at michaelzeidphotography.com and see how I've put my lenses to use. Generally, you don't need extremely wide, or if you're trying to do panoramas, my advice is to think about photographing sequentially from left to right and learn how to construct a panorama with a great amount of detail in Photoshop by stitching pictures together. Or you can use one wide-angle lens and cut the top and the bottom of the frame off, and you will have what looks like a panorama.
I actually meant, when I said panorama, I meant kind of a wide-angle landscape view is what I was sort of looking, what I was referring to.
Right.
As opposed to a true panorama.
Well, I think my widest wide-angle lens only goes to, I think it's 24 millimeters, which is not extremely wide. But it solves my needs. But you may have other needs, and you'll find it as you go out and make pictures, those needs will become apparent because you'll find yourself not being able to do that shot that you know would have won a Pulitzer had you had the right lens. And then you'll say, I'm going to go buy that right lens.
All right, Doug, thanks for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. What's the worst camera that you ever took a great photograph on? Did you ever just pull out an old Kodak pocket camera and say, this is the shot I want, I framed it perfectly, and it came out great? Isn't it photographer more than the technical stuff?
For sure, but I'm gonna take a slightly different slant on that question.
All right, well, hold that thought. I'm going to give you a chance to rethink your answer. We're going to take a break. Michael Zeid is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number, and we talk photography. We'll be back.
Support comes from Grapes and Grains Wine and Spirits, East Greenbush, New York, specializing in wine and craft spirits for more than 15 years, stocking single malts, bourbons, tequilas, and gins. GrapesandGrainsWine.com. Rhinebeck Artist Shops, professional picture framing and fine art materials, Rhinebeck, New Paltz, and now at 793 Broadway in Kingston. RhinebeckArt.com. Culligan Water of the Northeast, for over 80 years, providing pure drinking water as well as options for problem water at home and at work. CulliganNortheast.com. Kent Hicks Construction, specializing in deep energy retrofits, passive house, zero energy homes, and historic restorations, serving Western Massachusetts for over 25 years. KentHicksConstruction.com. And the Preservation League of New York State, Albany, partnering in preserving historic New York through advocacy, education, grants, and loans, so our past has a future. PreserveNYS.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you at 2:21 on a Thursday afternoon. Our guest today is Michael Zeid, who is appearing on this program, every 6 months or so, and we talk photography. Our number is 800-348-2551. Before the break, I asked you, what is the worst camera upon which you took a great photograph?
Well, let me I'm not going to answer your question the way don't be too surprised, but it's a meaningful answer for me. A lot of times when I was teaching, I would show the first picture on the board is a picture of two dogs. One was sharp and one was very fuzzy. This was taken by myself when I was about 5 years old with a box camera that my parents bought for me.
Like a brownie kind of thing?
Like a brownie, okay. Exactly. The dog that is fuzzy was my first dog, and you can imagine how much meaning that still holds for me to have this moment in time. It's the only picture of this dog that I have ever found that still exists. That is the most meaningful picture of all the pictures I've ever taken in many ways. And the camera that I took it with was probably at a cost of $6.50 at that point in time. And that's probably 1952.
Yeah, right. That's a somewhat responsive answer. I won't give you a hard time about it. The point is, if you had a world-class cellist who had a $40,000 Stradivarius, and then you gave them a $300 instrument, it would still sound pretty sweet.
It would, but I'm going to give you one more answer to that question. I'm not going to mention the brand because it really doesn't matter.
Okay.
But a friend of mine was married to someone who owned a big photographic you know, I can't even remember what the proper word for it is. But he would buy and sell photographs for a variety of uses. I showed him my work and he said, Michael, you know, I like the content of your work, but things are a little soft. The images were soft.
Yeah.
It had nothing to do with the lens I was using. It had nothing to do with the camera I was using. I was hand-holding it, and I really had not mastered how to hand-hold a camera and take a sharp image. You will not see me today without my Gitzo tripod supporting my camera, because a good picture is too important to find fault with because you did not take that extra 2.5 minutes to set the camera up on a tripod.
You're such a professional. All right, this one is from via email. This one's from Rebecca. Hi, I just returned from a month-long trip to Botswana and Namibia where I photographed many animals. I'm not a professional photographer, but I'm happy with a few of the photos. What I like about them is they capture the feeling of wildness. I'm not thrilled about the idea of putting them behind glass and framing them, as I don't know how this could be done, maintaining that feeling of wildness. Any ideas? And that's from Rebecca.
I think you just, if I'm understanding your comment the way you had intended, I think what you said is one of the most important things about a photograph. It should convey a mood. It's more than a literal translation of what you saw. You know, it's not an observation and a document. It's really an interpretation of your feeling of what the experience was like. And that's what I think all photographers try to do, which is imbue, if possible, a bit of themselves in the photograph that they're making that either tells a story. Well, they all tell stories about the photographer as well as the subject of the photograph. And that's what we're after, an emotional content.
All right. So you have brought many photographs here to this program and your appearances. Beautiful landscapes, sort of mysterious a touch of foreboding in some of them. What does this tell us about Michael Zeit?
Well, that's a great question. In fact, it's one I wanted to bring up. Ray and I had been talking about the issue of sense of place. I'm trying to do a collection of work in the Pioneer Valley, where I live now, that hopefully will end up as a book, but also for interior designers to use for their needs. All of this work is really, I think you'll find a thread that runs through it. And the thread that runs through it is mood. Some of the mood is not necessarily gaiety and frivolity, but it's more magical. It's a bit more foreboding in some cases.
I don't see much frivolity in the photographs that you've taken.
I don't want anyone to think that I'm taking the dark side of the moon when I'm photographing the Pioneer Valley. But it's my connection to landscape is really my feelings that come about from childhood that allow me to see myself within that space and see that space as part of how I see the world. And if I can, very quickly, I wanted desperately to take a picture of the eclipse of the sun that just happened.
Oh, yes,
yes. My wife's advice was, don't look into the sun, you dummy, because you're going to blind yourself.
That's a good point.
She didn't use the word dummy, but that was implied, I suppose, because a lot of people have ruined their eyesight that way.
Yeah.
I said goodbye, and I started driving around the valley looking for a site for this shot. I ended up back at my house. The shot, and I love the shot, and it's incredibly moody. If you look at my website, I think it's one of the first pictures on the site. It was shot through the leaves of an apple tree. The clouds had come over, which only added to the magical quality of the moment. I thought it would block out the solar eclipse, but it just added drama, tremendous drama. If you think about it, seeing a dark hemicircle in front of another white circle is not really what you would call an inspiring image. But if you see it in the context of a moody sky, and then the leaves, as I was beginning to say, all the leaves look like angry birds. It's not something that I tried to do, but it adds a certain, in this particular case, it adds to the mystical darkness of the moment.
And this is on your website?
What
is your website?
This is on website? My website. www.michaelzeidphotography.com. You'll see it. It's not labeled Eclipse of the Sun, but it'll be obvious that that's what it is.
All right, let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. Michael Zeid is our guest. And Jim and Adams, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon, Ray. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure thing.
Hey, Ray. And my question was, if I take a photograph that was taken with conventional film and developed from a negative, if I take the actual photograph and try to make electrostatic photocopy of that photograph, will that harm that photograph when it's exposed to the light in that machine?
Oh, no. You mean you're scanning the negative?
No, not the negative. The photograph itself.
Print. Oh, the print.
The print.
No, I mean, if you left it there for months, perhaps, and you hadn't, if this is a photograph, it's either going to be a silver gelatin print or it may be a digital print. In either case, only exposure to a lot of light over a long duration of time is going to harm it. I wouldn't worry about that at all.
It's not a digital. It's a conventionally produced on film and negative photograph.
Not to worry.
It would be a gelatin print, so I'm just going to take and scan it once and just to make one photostatic copy.
Not to worry, and it's a wonderful way of digitizing something so that you can have more freedom to interpret it with Photoshop.
Well, I'm not going to digitize. I'm just going to make a photostatic copy of it so I can have a copy of the photograph for myself.
Then don't worry about it. Just do it and enjoy it. Absolutely.
Thanks, Jim. We appreciate the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. If you have a photography question for Michael Zeid, 800-348-2551, or the email address is voxpopwamc.org. You look like you're about to say something,
ahead. It's very interesting. The project that I'm working on and my connection to the Valley has changed with time. Currently, one of the things that excites me a lot about the fact that I live in this place is that this is where the first dinosaur footprint was ever discovered.
Oh, yeah.
Within the United States.
Springfield, the museum there, you can see some of that.
You can see them, but it was actually found in a farmer's field in South Hadley.
Okay.
And initially, they thought it was the imprint of the raven's foot from Noah's Ark. It took them about 50 years to realize that this was not a large wild turkey that had solidified its footprint in the mud, but that this was a whole new creature.
Mm-hmm.
Dinosaurs were then actually put on the map in terms of the Pioneer Valley, because there's no other place in the United States, I believe, that has the best environments conducive to forming those fossil footprints.
Well, who knew?
Who knew?
That's very impressive indeed.
But
I didn't know that. You know what? I thought of a great thing for the next, before you're on the next time.
Yes.
So you're very much about place. And so I suggest you try this particular exercise. Pick four places that bore you to tears and then bring me back some interesting photographs of them.
Well, that's a hell of a challenge. Pardon that word.
Yeah. And I'm not talking about Studio A here. I mean, find some other boring places. All right. This is from email, and this came in at voxpop@wamc.org. And I love this question. It's from Steve in Amherst. I noticed that Michael describes his craft as making pictures. I grew up saying that I was taking pictures. I suspect his language is deliberate. I'd love to hear his thoughts. And that's from Steve in Amherst.
Steve, that's a wonderful question. Photographs are not in quotes snaps, which is a way that they're referred to by people disparagingly. There's a lot that goes into making a photograph. There's both the moment of capture, and that word capture is also something I'll get to in a moment. But it's that moment when you click the shutter, but it's also and all the decisions that go into it, but it's also how you post-process it. If it's a silver gelatin print, it's how you burn and dodge and crop the original frame.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it's now in a digital era, it's how you use Photoshop or Lightroom to imbue the photograph with what you experienced emotionally at the moment you took the picture. When you take a picture, you're making a raw exposure, which is one of the flattest, least attractive versions of what eventually will end up as a post-processed interpretation of beauty. But the raw capture has all the information that the sensor could capture. It's your job after that to do with it what you may. The word capture is not used in a way because, and I think it's an aggressive kind of comment about what you're doing with the world around you. You're looking at the world, you're observing it, and you're just selecting something from it that isn't going to in any way impair the path that the world will continue on after that picture is made. But it's a less aggressive way of saying that you respect the subject.
But still, taking is the first step of making.
Well,
and capture would be analogous to taking.
Taking and capture have the same kind of, right. It has the same flavor emotionally. And I'm not a stickler on this, but I do find it interesting that some photographers will not use the word capture. They'll say they have a relationship to their subject.
But when you go then, you have taken or captured, and then you go to the making, where you're in Photoshop or whatever software you use, does it then become something other than photography?
Well, we're photographers. I'll speak for myself because I'm not a painter. I also probably enjoy photography in ways I couldn't enjoy painting because painting takes so much time. I like the immediacy of my medium. But once you make the picture in post-processing, you're no longer replicating what things look like one for one. It is not the reality you saw.
And that's okay.
It has to be okay because it can't be the reality that was really out there. It's a version of that reality that you've created and shaped.
So you, to some extent, are a fiction author, a visual fiction author.
It has to be considered fiction. Some people try to make it as close a replication of what they saw as possible. Others take more liberty and imbue that picture with what they felt emotionally, which may mean you're darkening the shadows in the clouds a little bit. You may be changing some of the highlights. You're burning and dodging selected areas to suit your own aesthetic. And in the end, you've altered, to some extent, what you originally saw as in that vision.
You've confirmed for me once again that nothing is real.
That's probably so.
Michael Zeid is our guest, 800-348-2551. Judy in Valencia. Judy, you're on.
Hi, Michael.
Hi, Judy.
I have been a photographer for a really, really long time, since the olden days, all of the chemicals down the drain and that sort of thing.
Oh, no.
But obviously I've been doing digital for many years now. I wonder, is there some way that I could convert a negative to a digital file and then print it? Because I have so many negatives, and I wonder how that could be done. Obviously, I know what to do with the photographs, how to digitize them, but what about negatives?
It's a great question for people who want to convert their negatives into something that is more practical and usable these days in a digital format. Scanning is the process that you want to use. I know people who have very, very, very expensive scanners and who are masters at scanning. You don't need to go to those people and spend an inordinate amount of money, perhaps. But if you were to use an Epson scanner, and only using that name because it's the only brand I know, and I have
Canon
one,
and Ricoh,
or Canon or Ricoh.
Okay, fine.
Thank you.
Right.
All of those scanners will probably, if you buy a used one, let's say a $200 investment, you'll be able to convert all of those negatives into having a flexible, a new form that is much more flexible for today's uses.
But
oh, okay. Well, I don't have a problem. I always scan. I do have a scanner, and I do a lot of scanning. My question is, if you scan the negative, then does that come out? Do you have to kind of make it, in the opposite, how do I phrase this? I mean, it still looks like a negative.
No.
How do you print it?
You can set your scanner so that it will look like a negative, or you will end up with a digital file. There's settings on scanners so that you can turn negatives into positive and positive into negative.
Okay.
But
I just have a crummy, I have a cat, I shouldn't say that. I have a Canon printer, one of many, many printers I've had over the years, and it scans, but I don't think it's very sophisticated.
If this is important to you, I would go to a good camera store and talk with an expert in this part of your needs and get their advice. It's very easy to do, and it's very useful if you want to then take Photoshop or Lightroom and take that image into a more interpretive outcome.
Oh, right. Oh, of course. Well, I'm a Photoshop, big Photoshop user.
Well, there you go.
Anyway, thank you so much. I will try to do that.
Nice to talk with you. Thanks a lot,
Michael. Judy, we appreciate the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. But I'm confused by the mechanics of this. The negatives are generally very small. And so when you scan it, how many pixels or how many dots per inch are you getting out of a very small...
Well, thank you, Ray. I mean, another good question. But, I mean, if you're shooting 35-millimeter film in the old days and you were using Tri-X, let's say, which is was a 400 ISO film, it's very grainy because at high, it depends how you exposed it and developed it, but it could be very grainy. And that will never go away. But your scanners have the ability to... interpolate, I suppose is the word, that film into thousands of electronic, I can't, the right word will escape me, but it can give you the ability to blow an image up exceedingly large, huh. Because in a sense, it's giving you information, a rich amount of information, which will allow you to blow it up without having the image blow apart in the printing.
Michael Zeid is our guest. Our number is 800-348-2551, and we'll be right back.
Support comes from the Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, working on land protection projects that safeguard the water quality of Lake George. Hiking maps, public events, and more at lglc.org. Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Quarry and fabrication used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking. Rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires. Ashfieldstone.com. Agricultural Stewardship Association, helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve good farmland for good forever. agstewardship.org. George Heigel Antiques, Ballston Spa, New York, offering estate sale services including management, appraisals, and evaluations for individuals, families, and businesses. 518-396-7974. And George Propane, Goshen, Massachusetts, family-owned and operated for over 75 years, serving Western Massachusetts with propane and full-service heating and plumbing installation services and deliveries. GeorgePropane.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC, Ray Graff here along with Michael Zeid as we talk photography today. And you mentioned something before the first break about you doing work with architects and designers.
Yes.
And sort of emphasizing this sense of place. And so what the heck are you up to now?
Well, I actually changed my website yesterday, and it has a new look. The galleries are still there, but I actually have three images that are in frames that are on the homepage. What I'm doing is using the locale to solve the design solutions for people who are in need of finding photography for hospitals, for commercial spaces, for residential uses and clients. Hospitals there's a lot of wall space that needs images that can be soothing and comforting. Now, of course, Ray, what you're going to say is, Michael, some of your work is not as soothing.
You'll scare the daylights out of all the patients. Well done.
Whoever is listening to this program, take that with a grain of salt.
No, I'm kidding. It's beautiful, and there's a certain placid nature to some of those, but there's a mystery.
There's mystery and surprises is how I like to think of it.
Yeah.
But thank you, Ray. I'm just teasing you.
No, it's fine. And, you know, it's funny. You see a lot of photographs in waiting rooms of doctor's office, and it's oftentimes trips to Venice. And I just assume that it's one of the doctors who went to Venice.
Let me just say for any doctor or dentist listening out there, I would love to work with you in tutorials, but I know you have very sophisticated equipment, and you're probably very good photographers.
And they're much richer than you are, let's face it.
Much.
All right, let's go back to the phones in just a moment, but first let's take two emails here. This one is from Kristen in Valley Falls, New York. Says, hello, Mike, your photography is spectacular. Just
Thank
visited
you
your website.
Much.
I have a Nikon D3300. I usually do bird and wildlife photography. I want to start capturing the beauty of landscape, sunsets, sunrises, clouds, waterfalls, etc. What lens would you recommend for capturing this beauty, possibly in low light? And that is from Kristen.
Part of photographing things in low light depends on the lens, but also on your camera and its sensor. I take 30-second exposures with no amount of no noticeable amount of destruction to the image when it's blown up as a print. I would say the lens that I talked about before suits almost all of my needs. It's 28-300. I have a Nikon camera, so it's a Nikkor lens, but that's a wonderful range so that you can really bring things in at a distance and have the width to photograph in a fairly wide view if you need to as well.
And this one came in from Marie, and here's a modern problem for you. Marie writes, I enjoy taking photos with my Nexus 5X mobile phone. I had never heard of mobile photography before, but it's so much fun.
If it's so true. Mobile phones have cameras that far outdo the first digital camera I had myself. It's something that will not go away. There's no reason for most people to ever buy another camera, but it does not have the flexibility of interchangeable lenses or certain ways of manually constructing an image with shutter and aperture choices that only cameras will provide for you.
And one thing that digital phones have done, or wireless phones have done, they've increased the amount of lousy photographs in the world. And mine are among them.
I think photographers ourselves have added to that pile of refuse.
All right, this one's from Tom. I'm currently using a Canon ELF camera and like it for the size and ease of use. I mostly take travel photos. I'd like to have a better quality photograph, but keep the small size. What is your opinion of 4/3 micro camera? I don't know what that means.
You know, I wish I could give you advice on that. I assume that any camera can be a good camera. I don't know much about that size camera. If it has a good sensor and a sharp lens and the ability to make the pictures that you like, I'd say it's a good camera.
You just said earlier that not every camera is a good camera.
And if I think, as you said, Ray, it's in the eye of the beholder and the one who sees what the beholder saw and photographed.
All right, fair enough. Well done. You squeaked out of that one. Frank in Albany. Frank, you're on with Michael Zide.
Yes, how you doing, gentlemen? Thanks for taking my call.
Good.
I recently inherited old photo albums like that my mom had taken, my mom and dad, back in the 50s and 60s. And the album is like that old black construction paper with just the corners in them. And the pictures seem to be like drying out and cracking. Is there any way to preserve them? And also, is there any way that I could go about duplicating these shots for other family members?
Hey, Frank, before Michael answers, could you just turn the radio down? We're hearing it. And frankly, I sound terrific, but I don't need to hear myself. So just turn it down all the way. And then, Michael, you go ahead.
Okay, one moment.
Okay.
We'll wait. Adventures in Radio. Are you back, Frank?
I did.
Okay.
Yes, we're back.
Here's a couple of things to consider. First of all, the paper, and I have those albums myself, the paper that those pictures are not adhered to necessarily, but in photo corners in contact with, is probably over time going to help destroy your pictures because it's not archival. There's a lot of acids and chemistry that is being expelled by paper that was used in scrapbooking and notebooks back in those days. My suggestion is if the surfaces are cracking and you really care, I would take them to, I would call someone who's into photo archiving, an expert in that field. My suggestion is take your pictures out of the book and scan them. If you scan them, do you know anything about scanning or making digital prints?
I don't. It'd be all kind of new to me.
What I would say is they can all be scanned, and you can find a service that will do it inexpensively. And then you can make copies of these things through whatever technology. I hate to say CVS, but I said CVS.
Oh, you just did.
I didn't. Any place. When I was young, we had our pictures developed at drugstores.
Right.
So drugstores are still in the business of providing photographic services. Explore that question with them, and I bet you'll get a good answer.
Yeah, is there any way to keep them moist?
That advice I can't give you. If your home is extremely dry, or they're in an attic, that's not a good thing. Keep the temperature kind of in the middle range, and try not to have extremes of humidity or dryness.
But you definitely take them out of that book and maybe put them in a Ziploc or something temporarily.
You can call up even a high quality call a local photo store. And ask them if they sell archival products like storage boxes. You can find them, but it's more for professional use.
Yeah.
You'd have to go searching, but most photo stores can lead you to where you need to go.
And there's this thing called the internet. You could probably search on that too and find
it. There is that. There is that.
Yes, sir. I'm still in the Middle Ages, but I appreciate it. And I don't want to. Let them go. I mean, they're small.
No, by taking them out of those notebooks and putting them in archival materials.
Okay, let's go over to Justin. Justin in Albany, you're on. Justin.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good.
Thanks for taking my call.
Welcome.
Great program here.
Thank you.
Name is Justin here in Albany, and I started off as a kid in Manhattan with a Leica. And I was taking little pictures, trying to get some good composition as a young kid. But then I left it for a long time, and I got back into it with my own kids doing sports. And then as a part-time hobby, I got into working for a few of the newspapers up here doing sports photography. And then I won the New York Press Association for first place for action photography, action sports.
That sounds like a nice thing.
I didn't like any of it. I hated it, so I stopped doing it because that type of photography was just crazy because you would go do your shoots, and then you would go into this back room, and then you had to make a deadline and get those pictures edited and over to the newspapers by a certain time, usually 11 o'clock or something.
My suggestion is it's time to take the Leica, put it aside, and go digital. And things have an immediacy when you're shooting digitally, and the price of film.
I don't have that Leica anymore. I wish I did.
Yeah.
I was using 5D Mark IIs. I had two of them with L lenses, one wide, one 70-200 2.8. But I was wondering, that type of photography I really love, I never made any money on it, so I think that's why I loved it. But I was wondering if you ever like to play around with setting up on a tripod, doing the mirror locking so you don't get any shake, doing maybe a 3-second timer so your hands aren't on it, and doing bracketing where you get that dynamic range of three different exposures, and then putting them, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, of course.
I was wondering if you like to play with that kind of type of photography.
You know, I don't. And it's not that I have anything against it. In some ways, I hearken back to another age. I was thinking of doing some high dynamic range work recently to get both the shadow detail and the highlight detail within the image. I use Photoshop to help, and layers and masks to help bring things into that kind of the highlights and the shadows into the range that I want.
Yeah.
But I think that the way you're doing it, it's a beautiful technology, and you may as well make use of it.
You know, my iPhone has built-in HDR.
No kidding.
It's crazy.
Oh, my goodness.
I didn't even know it until I took some photographs.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Boy, for me, this one came out really well. Yeah, it's amazing. Let's go to Dinah in Newburgh. Dinah, you're on.
Hello, it's Dina. But
I'm sorry, Dina. You're on.
The question about converting negatives to digital, would the same apply for converting slides to digital?
Yes.
Okay.
The only problem with slides is they have to be held very flat. I would talk to it's a matter of sharpness. I've never gotten the sharpness that I really liked with the scanner that I used at that time, though I know that it can be done. But that's what you need to take care of, is that the plane of your slide is flat and parallel to the scanning bed. And it's sometimes it's not an easy task.
You know, for my one of my older relatives, many years ago, I did a project, and there was an actual device that you can get, that it's a USB device, and you put your slides in it, and it scans the slides really well.
Well, that's something to look into.
You've answered my question.
Very good.
Thanks, Dana. We appreciate it very much. Michael Zide is here, and we go to Gene and Wilton. Gene, you're on.
Hello. It's kind of coincidental that you were having this discussion while I was riding home trying to make up my mind about what to do with some pictures. we're having a family gathering on Sunday, and we had someone in our family pass away. We had sent to us a whole bunch of family pictures. I need to somehow keep these for me, but also be able to give them away. I was trying to decide whether to scan them on my printer or take a picture of them, because sometimes when I take a picture, it seems that it's a really good, it does a really good job. Do you think scanning is better or not?
Yes.
I do have a very good camera.
It's better because you're getting rid of one of the repetitive steps that will not give you the same detail that the scan could give you. Aside from, it was your lens sharp and sharply focused on what you were photographing? Was what you were photographing perfectly parallel to your lens when you took that picture? I would say a scan is by far going to be a better way to go. And I think it's in many ways a lot simpler.
Well, except that you have to keep taking it off and putting it on, you know.
True. You would have to change out each photograph each time you wanted to photograph another one, correct?
That's true. All right. I just had one other thing I wanted to mention. A while ago, you mentioned dinosaur footprints.
Yes.
And I remember from when I was in college and student teaching in St. Johnsville, New York, that there was an area there with a whole bunch of dinosaur footprints. I didn't know if you knew about that.
I'd love to know more about it, but I have to say the valley is a magnificent place to photograph, but what's underneath the surface of the valley soil is as fascinating or even more fascinating. In fact, the Holyoke Range in the Pioneer Valley is the only range that is oriented east to west instead of north to south.
Really?
Eastern part of the United States. And this is because of early cataclysmic action. The geology of this the Pioneer Valley is fascinating to study, and the dinosaurs are a story unto themselves, but we have plenty of tracks. So if you want to come to the valley and you're trying to photograph them, I will give you a hint. It was passed on to me. Take a bottle of water with you and pour it on the tracks before you take the picture.
Oh, really?
The tracks, whether they're indentations or they're three-dimensionally lifted above the surface of the rock, they come out with much more detail.
That's very interesting. Thank you, Gene, for the call. So you have photographed fossils.
On my website, you'll see three tracks. They do look a bit like gigantic turkey imprints, but they're not imprints. They're actually raised surfaces. There's a place that I'd like to, I'll give a shout out to, called Nash's Dino Land in near Amherst, Massachusetts.
Yeah.
In his backyard, he goes digging for tracks and has made a lifetime of supplying museums and notable museums as well as passers-by with wonderful plates that have these wonderful tracks in them.
Oh, that is terrific. Now, we are just about out of time, Michael Zide. What is your website again?
It's the three W's and a dot, michaelzidephotography.com.
And we spell Zide, Z-I-D-E?
Thank you for asking. Yes, Z-I-D-E. If anyone is interested in speaking with me, please, there's ways of connecting with me.
Okay.
And tutorials, if that is of interest, please give a call.
All right.
Thank you, Ray, for mentioning that.
All right, quickly here. We have 30 seconds. This one came in from Jen. Hi, I'm a recently retired staff photographer. A photographer never really retires, though. Can you recommend any strong photo group I could get involved in for inspiration and to keep me shooting for fun?
You know, I started a meetup group that has about 360 people in it now. Meetup is something that you can look into to see if there's a meetup, M-E-E-T-U-P, group in your area.
Okay. Well, this was fun. Nice having you here. And we'll go to the website and I'll check out the photographs and we'll talk next time. Support comes from Interactive Media Consulting, a team of online market strategists providing websites, branding, and digital marketing to the Capital Region and beyond since 1996. iMediaConsult.com. Colby Attorney Service, document filing, document and information retrieval and other services, including legal publishing and corporate record searches, ColbyService.com. 20 Railroad Public House, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, newly renovated, providing local and seasonally inspired pub fare using antibiotic and added hormone-free meats, local produce, craft beer, cocktails, and wine, 20RailroadPublicHouse.com. And the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond, skidmore.edu/tang. Thanks again to Michael Zide for being here today. Thank you for listening and for the great calls and emails. Your phones were answered by Colleen O'Connell, our engineer, the one and only Zach Malloy. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, well, gosh, tomorrow's Friday. So that's a food Friday. Tomorrow, Capital Region chefs Michael Lappi and Josh Coletto will be here to talk about pop-up restaurants. That is tomorrow at 2. Meantime, have a great night. Stand by now for news.